Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up in Cassopolis, Michigan, in a farmhouse with no running water. The son of a one-armed handyman, he put himself through college by washing dishes and earned his law degree at night while teaching handicapped kids in Detroit's public schools. He was our mayor for 8 years and then became the first African-American president of the American Bar Association. Today, he's the chairman of Dickinson Wright. His name? Dennis Archer. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible, presented by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now back to Anything Is Possible with Jack Rasula on News Talk 760 WJR. Brought to you by Trust in Us, a world-class executive search firm. Now, here's Jack.
We're with the chairman of Dickinson Wright, the Honorable Dennis Archer. Dennis, welcome. It's an honor to have you.
Jack, thank you very much. I'm delighted to be here with you.
Can we start by talking about your childhood and your parents?
Well, Jack, let me just say that I had a very interesting and challenging childhood. And what I mean by that is that I was born in the city of Detroit, and I lived here for 5 years. And at the age of five, I moved to Cassopolis, Michigan. Now, when I was a youngster, growing up through the age of five, like most average young boys, I think, I did not like to take baths. I would rather do almost anything rather than to take a bath. It's more fun to go out and play and that kind of thing. And, oh, I'm fine. I'll wash my hands, eat, that kind of stuff. Went to Cassopolis and found that where we were living, we did not have, as you mentioned in your introduction, running water, which meant, for those who can follow all of that, is that we did not have a bathroom. We did not have a shower. We did not have a bathtub. I could not go to the faucet and turn it on and get a drink of water and the like, although we did have a well water, meaning that inside our home there was a pump that my mom would use to wash dishes, wash clothes, things of that nature. And so it was an interesting childhood growing up without having in-house facilities. It also meant that I did not have any kind of parties when I was growing up because I was frankly too embarrassed to think about inviting friends to come by to have a party or to have some kind of get-together because then they'd have to go, as I did, out to the outhouse. Because most of the young people that I grew up with in Cassopolis had running water.
What did your mom teach you and what did your dad teach you?
I had the best role models that I think a young person could ever have. My dad had a third grade education, lost his arm just above his left elbow in a car accident before I was born. My mom had a high school education. They made it very clear to me, ever since I could remember, that I was going to go to college. Neither one of them had ever stepped on a college campus. But they made it very clear to me that I was going to go to college. They couldn't tell me where to go to college, couldn't tell me what to major in, but that I was going to go to college. My dad taught me how to work with electricity so I could repair and today can repair most electrical things in our home, from light switches to lights, that kind of thing. My dad taught me how to grow and develop, harvest, and then go sell a garden that we had in the back that I would use as a hustle during the summertime after we got as much as we needed for the house, and I would go sell red raspberries or corn or whatever the case may be. And this, of course, when I was caddying during the summer, that was my first job when I was 8 years old. My mother taught me respect and discipline. My mother made it very clear to me that I should know my colors, not know my numbers before I went to school. Both made it very clear to me that I should respect people who were older than I, especially adults. So I knew how to say yes, ma'am, and no, ma'am, before I walked out of the house. That gave me a very, very good foundation upon respect.
I've been doing this show almost 4 years. One common theme amongst all the guests is that they had a great mom, a special mom. What advice would you give to the moms listening tonight, Dennis Archer?
Jack, I would say to mothers that you made it very possible for us, your children, to be born. Would not happen without you. That you have something very special that all of us, whether we are your sons or your daughters, respect and admire. And we believe in you. You do not have to have a title. You do not have to have wealth. You do not have to have anything other than you love us, you care for us, and you want the best for us. Mothers are our best role models, as are our fathers. And thus, we follow pretty much what our moms tell us to do. We're very loyal to our mothers.
When you were growing up in this house with no running water, caddying at 8, setting pins at 8, what were your dreams back then?
Jack, I just wanted to be able to go through my high school, junior high, get the best grades that I could so I could go to college. I didn't know where I was going to go. And I had nothing for which I could dream. I couldn't conceptualize doing anything. I had no idea of what I wanted to be or to do when I went to college. Thus, my dreams were very, transparent and not huge at all. I just knew that I wanted to make sure that I followed what my mother and my dad said. And I also knew that the teachers were always right, so I always made sure, I tried to make sure, that I did not do anything inappropriate in the classroom, because despite the fact that we did not have a telephone for a long time in Cassopolis, my mother or father somehow found out about it before I got home.
We're talking to Dennis Archer. When we come back, we'll ask him about the recent election. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible, presented by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Brought to you by Trust in Us, a world-class executive search firm. Once again, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
Welcome back. We're with Dennis Archer, who served the people of this area for 8 years as mayor and has served them really his whole life. Dennis, let's go back to Tuesday, November 4th, 11 p.m., and the announcement comes, president-elect. What were your thoughts?
Jack, before that time frame, I had been invited to address the crowd down at the JW Marriott, which was the Michigan election returns reception for all of the volunteers who had worked so hard to assure that Senator Barack Obama would win the state of Michigan. I addressed the crowd, and then I looked up at the clock, or I looked at my watch and saw that we were approaching 11 o'clock, and I decided I did not want to be there. I wanted to go home. I wanted to watch in the confines of our home what the election returns was going to be like. Let me set the predicate for you. For 8 years, Jack, I've been carrying what I would call a pit in my stomach. It occurred when the news media 8 years ago declared that Vice President Al Gore had won Florida. My wife and I were, along with her campaign workers, were celebrating her victory, where she led the ticket to become reelected for the 36th District Court. And we were watching television, and when the announcer said that Vice President Al Gore had won the election or had won Florida, that meant he was going to be our next president. A lot of happiness because I'd worked hard on his behalf as I'd worked for my wife's campaign. And then about a half an hour later came the announcement. We think we were premature. And then, of course, we all know that the United States Supreme Court ultimately made a ruling that resulted in the halting of the counting of the ballots in Florida, which resulted in Governor George W. Bush becoming our next president. So I wanted to go home. I wanted to find out what was going to take place. And at 11, I was watching Channel 4, and Devin and Carmen came on, and they said, it's 11 o'clock. We're going to go to our national office, you know, national, whatever they were referring to it as. And they said they have an announcement to make. And they said the next president of the United States was going to be Barack Obama. And I can't tell you how great I felt as a result of that. There was a lot of emotions. I still feel it, and I sense your listeners can probably sense it from me right now, how enormous that was and what it meant to the United States of America and so many people who had heretofore given up their lives to give people of color, and in particular African Americans, the right to vote. Because when the United States Constitution was originally drafted, women did not have the right to vote, and slaves were counted as three-fifths of a person without the right to vote. And the reason why they counted as three-fifths of a person was to determine how many people would be eligible to be in the United States Congress, because that's when they would do every 10 years or so reapportionment.
I've been struck. I've listened to a lot of African Americans. You know, what was your first thought? Time after time I hear, I just wish my dad or my grandfather were alive to witness this.
Bill Cosby, who had come into Detroit in advance of the election, I think capped it off for all of us. And here's what Bill Cosby said. He reminded us how important it is this election was going to be, and that every vote must count. And because every vote must count, and this was the first time that an African American was the Democratic Party's nominee, in fact, the first person of color to be a nominee of their ticket. And he said that this was personal. This vote that everybody was going to take was very personal. And thus, he would encourage everyone to take a picture of the person who they thought of, dreamed about, loved, whether it was a grandmother, their mother, their aunt, their uncle, some civil rights movement, you know, person in the civil rights movement, take them to the polls with you and vote. What that meant, Jack, in terms of response to your question, is that America demonstrated that it had the capacity to overlook the issue of race and go to competence, brilliance, fortitude, somebody who had a vision that they could believe in, and they believed in it, and they gave him their votes. And not only did he win, obviously, Michigan, but he won a large number of states, including Florida and others, that heretofore had gone to President George W. Bush.
What does that election tell to people of color in this country?
Well, I think, I don't know about you, Jack, but I heard, and I think I'm not alone, our mothers used to tell us at the kitchen table, you make sure you eat all of your food because there are children in China who are going to go hungry. I think a lot of us have heard that before. In this instance, because education is so important, and I've heard you, Jack, talk about education and its importance, can you imagine how many mothers of children of color, irrespective of the ethnicity, will be able to put their arm around their son, daughter, grandson, foster child, niece, nephew, etc., and say, look, baby, see that on television? That's President Barack Obama. You can grow up and be president. It makes a major impact. And I say it, and the reason why I say that with conviction is because I think I've got a Rolodex of about 100 mentees. And this Rolodex came about because when I was on the Michigan Supreme Court, and when I was mayor, children would come by and visit me, or I'd see them in a church or see them somewhere, and they say, can I come by and ask you what it's like to be a mayor or a judge or a lawyer? And I would ask them, how did you happen to decide you wanted to be a lawyer? At least think about it. And they said, well, because a judge came into our class, or a lawyer came into our class. And they were telling us about themselves. I asked a question, And the judge said, you know what, Jim or Joe or Charlie or Susan or what, that's a great question. And then after the class came over and put their arm on my shoulder and said, you know, you'd make a good lawyer. And so children take that. They listen to it. They hold on to it. And sometimes you might not think they really pay attention, or you might not think that they're listening or would have an inclination to think about being a professional, because they may come from a family where maybe neither mom or dad happens to be either a professional, or they could come from a school of hard knocks where there's some real challenges in the home. But that child holds on to what was said to them. And so if their mother, their aunt, their grandmother, and as you said before we had the break about moms and what would I say to mothers, mothers have a tremendous influence. Put an arm around a child and say, this is what you can be. Boy, that's powerful.
Let's go back to 1990-91. You're one of seven state Supreme Court justices. The lawyers in this state, I think, had named you the best. Why did you decide to run for mayor, Dennis?
It was in 1990, in April, as a matter of fact, when Michigan Lawyers Weekly, they had sent out a survey to lawyers and judges around the state. They were looking for the 20 most respected judges in the state of Michigan, and it turned out as a result of that survey that I was the most respected out of all. And so I've always carried that as a badge of honor. I thought about being one of seven. I enjoyed, loved the court, good collegial relationships with all of the judges on our courts. We were noted to be Democrats or Republicans, but when we did our job, when we were in the conference room, when we decided cases, when we discussed the cases, we just discussed the law. We discussed the case. Never any conversation about whether you're Democrat or Republican. Neither when, you know, it never occurred when we were off by ourselves. We might be talking to a colleague about why they ought to change their vote or whatever. It was straight up. I decided that I thought that I could make the most difference in this state as a political servant if I were privileged to be elected as mayor of the city of Detroit. As one of seven, I could always share my point of view. I could write a concurring opinion, or I could agree with the majority, or I could write a dissent if I disagreed. So I could share my point of view. But as mayor, as one person working with a great staff, working with the community, business community, and with the nine members on our Detroit City Council, I thought if I were privileged to be elected, I could make a difference.
We're talking to Dennis Archer, and I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible, presented by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR, presented by Trust in Us, a world-class executive search firm. Now, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
We're talking to Dennis Archer, who earned his law degree at night while teaching handicapped kids in Detroit's public schools. Dennis, for 8 years you served the people of Detroit as mayor. What did that teach you?
I learned a lot by listening. That's an art form that is rarely utilized. I learned a lot by listening and then acting. Sometimes members of the press, whether the journalists covering those of us in City Hall or in editorials, would admonish me for being too judicious or too judicial. Not acting immediately on something, but rather wanted to think through what would be in the best interest of the city of Detroit. I've learned to listen, but I acted rather quickly once I gathered the information. I was advised after the election in 1993, Dennis, take your time. The problems of the city that we were facing at that time didn't happen overnight. You're not going to be able to solve them overnight, so take your time. I decided not to take that advice. And the reason, Jack, in my own view, was if I took my time, then others who I needed to create new businesses, thus jobs in the city of Detroit, would take their time, and we could not afford it. So I ran a sprint. not a marathon. I sprinted the entire marathon. I ran as fast as I could possibly run in order to bring about an improvement of the quality of life. I've learned that you cannot find a better group of citizens as we have here in Detroit and in the Detroit region. One of the things when I was campaigning, citizens would say, well, what can we do to help you? And after I got elected, I thought about it and said, let's have clean sweep. And that's when we brought together people who would come out on a Saturday and we would clean up parks and other parts of our city that perhaps was not cleaned up, at least to the standards that I'd like to see them. And we had people from all over the city of Detroit. Judge Breck, by the way, who was on the Oakland County Circuit Court, came in. Brooks Patterson sent some heavy movers in, you know, so you could pick up the garbage and stuff like that and move. So it was a great effort. We had, I think, somewhere between 15 and 17,000 people the first year. My last year, we had 50,000 people who volunteered to do that. My first year, we had about, somewhere between 5,000 and 7,500 people out for what was called Devil's Night, and I got burnt. I told the Detroit, our city and our region, this will not happen to me again. When I left office, we had 35,000 people out over the 3 days of October 29, 30, and 31, and we changed Devil's Night into Angel's Night. We had the business community. I don't think any metropolitan area has an urban city like Detroit that had the business community that was willing to roll up its sleeves and invest in the city of Detroit. We had a president of the United States, Bill Clinton, along with Vice President Al Gore, Secretary Robert Rubin, Secretary Henry Cisneros, Secretary Ron Brown, and others, along with our Michigan delegation of Don Riegel and Carl Levin and members of both sides of the aisle in Congress, all worked together to help Detroit to become an empowerment zone. We had the financial institutions, in large measure led by Brenda Snyder, who's the vice president of Comerica Bank, who put up $1.1 billion. That's what they committed themselves to loan over a 10-year period of time. Automotive said, we'll invest $600 million in this 18.35 square mile area. And the most important thing that I learned about that whole process was it came from the bottom up, Jack. It didn't start from the top down. Here's what I think ought to happen. But rather, we went in with the leadership of Gloria Robinson, who led this initiative for the city of Detroit. We went in and asked the citizens, what do you want? What do you need? What's the geographic area? What would you like to see there? What would you like to have done? I then went to Bob Larson. I said, Bob Larson, we've got all this land. We've got all this vacant land around the city of Detroit. What can we do with it? I want you to be the leader. I want you to head up this urban or this land use task force. I need it in, I think it was 120 days. They did it. I mean, they came back. People volunteered. They rolled up their sleeves. What that showed me was that people really love this city. They love the region. They're willing to roll up their sleeves and make it happen. And the financial, or the foundation community, with the help of David Smidren, we were able to attract $350 million of foundation grants, not only to the city of Detroit, that number, but it was also for the region, where it was homeless, for children, etc. It was a powerful statement of what a city can do. That's the reason why today I am not worried about the future of the city of Detroit, because it will turn itself around.
Mike and Marian Illich, Peter Karmanos,
absolutely,
Ford family, etc. It sounds like you're ready to run, but recently you came out and said, I am not going to run for governor. And there had been reports for a year that you would.
Jack,
why
what
not?
I wanted to do, and what I think I've accomplished, is I wanted to raise the bar for anybody who wanted to present themselves to say, my name is, you fill in the blank, and for the last 15 years, 20 years, I've been. You could name it. You could be a mayor, a state rep, state senator, Attorney General, Secretary of State, whatever the case may be, this is what I've done. And they might have had a great track record. But if you don't, Jack, in today's times, understand what the problems are here in Michigan by meeting with groups and organizations who represent business people, large and small, to appreciate the challenges that they face and what needs to be changed in this state, then that person, if they are elected without asking those questions, they wind up being on the job training for 6 to 18 months. And they might appoint Melvin Smith, let's say, to be the director of commerce. But they find out 6 to 18 months later, after talking and finally listening to people, that really James Jones would be the best person. In the meantime, you've got Smith, who has moved to Lansing, sold her home wherever they were in Michigan, moved up there, kids are in school, working their hearts out, trying to be the best that they can be to serve the governor who appointed them. We can't afford that. Michigan can't afford that. I decided, Jack, that I was not going to run because I recalled after I'd had a number of meetings, and there were some meetings that I did not do because I'd made my mind up early enough that I was comfortable in my own mind saying I'm not going to run. I didn't want to go through the rest of the meetings. But I will tell you this, Jack, Michigan can be turned around, but you need somebody who is prepared now when they get in office to do the job. We can't afford on-the-job training.
Who's the best person we have out there?
I don't think the best person is announced yet.
Okay. Talk about the Detroit public schools, Dennis Archer.
Jack, if there's one thing that whether you read, and I'm not, I don't get a cut off his book, but if you read Thomas Friedman's This World is Flat, he gives you a very good picture. And I'd suggest that to any parent, any teacher, any counselor, if you've not read This World is Flat, please do. Your classroom, your child, America and Michigan and this metropolitan area favor and read that book, because what you will learn is that the key to everything, the success for America, not just your child, is education. And Jack, we're not delivering that for our kids. We've got to get that together right here in the Detroit Public Schools, but it's not just the Detroit Public Schools. It is statewide. We've really got to do something about education. I'm delighted that Governor Granholm has raised the bar in terms of what is required for our students to graduate from high school, but I think we have to take a look at it. And having met with a number of superintendents at a meeting from Oakland, Wayne, and Macomb, what about those students who do not want to go to college but want to go into vocational school? Do they really need to have 4 years of math, 4 years of science, several years of foreign language, etc.? There might be some room. I don't know. I'm not the expert, but I do know we did need to raise the bar, because the only thing that was really required was to take a high school civics class, and that's all you had to do. You could take basket weaving, anything else that a high school had to offer. As long as you took a civics class and passed it, you were qualified to graduate from a Michigan high school. That had to change.
We're talking to Dennis Archer, a true pioneer. When we come back, we'll ask him about that. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything is Possible, presented by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
Trust in Us, a world-class executive search firm, presents Anything is Possible with Jack Krasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with a true pioneer, Dennis Archer. Let's go on. First person of color to be the president of the State Bar of Michigan. First person of color to be the president of the American Bar Association after 120 years of history. For a long time, person of color couldn't even be a member of that association. Over and over and over, Dennis, where did you get the courage, the confidence, the guts to do these things?
I've been blessed by having a great family. My mother and dad, I had three outstanding uncles, Ronald Garner, James Garner, and Warren Garner. I had a brilliant aunt by the name of Josephine Lombardo. And I had a grandmother that was just out of this world. Her name was Letty Garner. Between all of them and my mom and dad, I had the best family that you could ever have, because they were all pushing and encouraging me to get the best education possible. Don't let anything stand in your way. Work for it. Save for it. And keep looking for an opportunity to try to help people. Then I've had some very great mentors. And they are of different colors, and men and women. I've been very blessed to have good mentors, because along the way, you cannot, at least for me, I could never do it all by myself. I mean, it was somewhere along the line, somebody came into my life that gave me just great advice. One of them is my wife. Trudy was spectacular. When we first started dating, I didn't have the best taste in clothes. I did not have an appreciation for starting with the silverware on the outside end. I was always clean. I was always, you know, doing the best I could. I had a good foundation, but there was always something that was always missing, and she helped round that off. But, you know, I think about Damon Keith, for example, in the law, who is yet today a mentor. A friend who was very helpful to me but is no longer with us, Judge George Crockett Jr., who was a former United States congressman. I was able to run his campaign. Though we had our different points of view, Mayor Coleman Young at one point was very helpful to me in giving me sound advice. Charles Levin on the Michigan Supreme Court, Larry Sharfus in my former law firm before I joined the Michigan Supreme Court, and others. When Sam Gardner, who's no longer with us, when I started practicing law, Sam said, Dennis, and I just graduated from law school, started in a law firm, he said, keep a clean desk so that when a person comes in to see you, they think that the only thing you got to do is take care of their problem. Get up out of your office chair and go out to the lobby and meet your client, bring them back in. All those kinds of things. A lot of good people helped me along the way. And all of them to a person always encouraged me, I'm sure they did others, to work hard for whatever it is, learn how not to accept no for an answer.
I noticed you left off your golf instructor.
I wouldn't want to put that on anybody, Jack. About a year ago, my handicap went from a 17 to 21. But now that I'm not running for governor, a friend of mine and I are going to go to a golf school. He doesn't need as much help as I do, but I got a slice that I cannot correct. And I know I'm leaving my club face open, and I can't correct. I've tried the grip and everything else.
I think the secret is more dishes. Do more dishes. Okay.
Listen, I did a number on Thanksgiving, although my younger son, Vincent, was outstanding.
You've talked at different times about the browning of America.
Yes.
That people of color will be the majority in America by around 2050.
Nope. It's now 2042, according to the United States Census. That phenomenon, the browning of America, started back in 1982-83 when a social scientist proclaimed two things. First, that the Hispanic population would be the largest single ethnic minority group, and that by 2056, the majority of people living in the United States would be people of color. Those numbers changed to this extent. 2003, the Hispanic community was named the largest single ethnic minority group at 13.2%. 2004, the United States Census Department said that the Hispanic and Asian population would triple in size by 2050, and by 2050, the non-white Hispanic population would be 50.1%. This year, about 6 months ago, the United States Census Department said by 2042, because of birth rate, etc., people of color would be the majority of people living in the United States by 2042.
What does that mean to business people, Dennis?
What it means is that you have an emerging population of people of color with discretionary dollars to spend. So if you're selling cars, if you're selling fast food, if you have a hotel, if you have something where you want people to spend their discretionary dollars, you want to be able to gain market share. Market share is awfully important, because what that does is to allow you to have a profit if you happen to be a public or private corporation. And what you want to be able to do is to involve people of color in the process of making decisions, because that way you gain the benefit of people giving their points of view as to why something needs to be modified or changed. And it puts you in a better position to win. Because if you think about all the businesses, Jack, including yours, that you do business and trust in us with companies from outside the United States, they want you to be able to bring to them the kind of executive people that can help their company grow. And if they're going to be looking at China, India, and other places like that, they need people of color to help them understand.
Talk to us about why a young person should consider a life of public service.
Jack, when you give back to the community and you help others, there's an old saying, if you cast your bread on the water, it will come back to you. And if you try to help people without thinking about wanting something in return, that's the best feeling in the world.
Last question, Dennis Archer. What advice would you give to our young listeners this evening?
I would ask all of our young listeners this evening to please get the very best grades that you can in education. Please get your best grades, because if those who work the hardest, who put aside all of the other kind of things that are out there, and you get the best grades, when you get ready to graduate from high school, you have more options as to where to go to college. If you start college and you get the best grades in undergraduate school and you want to be a professional, and let's say get a graduate degree in master's of business administration, doctor, lawyer, whatever the case may be, the better the grades you have, the more opportunities that you have for scholarships, the more opportunities you have to progress. It's a presumption that you have to start. But in order to keep it and get ahead, you will always have to be prepared. Always be prepared. Don't walk into a classroom to take a test if you're unprepared. Make sure you study. Be prepared. If the better prepared you are, the more successful you will be.
Dennis Archer, I just want to say thanks. So much of what we have today in this city, Fox Theater, Comerica Park, Campus Martius, CompuWare, Ford Field, on and on and on, was a direct result of your...
Fox, however, was... Mayor Coleman Young. The others, yeah, I'll take credit for it. We worked hard to get there. But I don't want to take credit for something I did not do. Fox was there because of the belief that Mike and Miriam Illich has in this city of Detroit, and they work with Mayor Coleman Young to pull it off.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Our guest next Sunday will be the head of the METC, Jimmy Eppolito. Until then, I'm Jack Crisula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spahom.
Believe in yourself.